Welcome to the Collide Podcast. We're a growing community of everyday chicks colliding with Jesus in our mess, our pain, our joy, and our stories. We value showing up as we truly are, so that's what you'll find here. Walls and masks being torn down so that we can allow Jesus to meet us where we truly are and hear about other women doing the same. We can't wait to collide with you.
What people think of when they think of church is going to be rebranded, re-known, re-understood in a different way. I think the current sense of what church is will continue and will persist, but there's going to be such a much broader mixed economy or multiple expressions of how Christ Church manifests itself.
Welcome to the Collide Podcast. I'm Willow Weston, the founder and director of Collide, and today I'm super excited to have Corey Schlosserhall on the podcast today. Corey grew up in the Dakotas and he graduated from the University of Oregon. He earned a PhD in organizational communication from the University of Minnesota, and he has served as the communications director for the Presbytery of Seattle and currently serves as the executive presbyter for the Northwest Coast Presbytery. His service is informed by his background as a university professor, wilderness guide, entrepreneur, food service manager, and consultant. I mean, what hasn't this guy done? And Corey speaks, teaches, and consults locally and nationwide on wholehearted discipleship, innovative leadership, and helping Christ's church flourish in the 21st century. Corey is a cheerleader and a coach of mine personally, and I love the work he does to serve leaders in the church, impacting the world in amazing ways. So I'm super excited that you guys get to hang out with Corey, because I often get to meet with him and learn from him. So Corey, welcome to the Collide Podcast.
Well, thank you. And the feeling is so mutual, Willow.
Well, this is going to be fun. As a leader of leaders, as a coach to pastors, as one who wholeheartedly still buys into the church, but also believes in redreaming what it could be, today I want to ask you so many things. I'm excited to talk to you about burnout, about the beauty you're seeing in the church, about the things that get in the way of leaders fulfilling, living into their calling. I mean, we will have all sorts of probably bunny trails we get on today, because this is my time where I get to ask you a lot of questions you usually ask me. So this is super fun. I just want to talk right up front, layman's terms. Your title is executive presbyter. What does presbyter mean to those who don't know?
That's great. Well, the denomination that the church I serve as a part of is the Presbyterian denomination. And so presbyter literally in Greek means elder. In the Presbyterian church, both pastors and local governing elders are referred to as elders. And pastors are teaching elders, local governing lay leaders are ruling elders. And the term executive presbyter comes from that lineage, and it's basically an executive director. So if you're an executive director of any nonprofit organization, that would probably be the closest parallel to what I do. So a lot of it is organizational administrative. A lot of it is consultative and coaching and leadership, equipping and developing.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to have you on because I do respect you as a leader and respect so much the work that you do to inspire and coach other leaders. Thanks, Will. Have a coach that's been in your own life, whether you go all the way back to high school or sometime between then and now, who greatly influenced your leadership?
Yeah. Well, some people who greatly influenced my leadership, I don't know if they would call themselves my coach, but I experienced them as that. So yes, I've had several people that have served in that role. And most recently, I would say Patty Bergen and one of your favorite people, Bill Palmer.
Cool. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. When you think about some of the greatest lessons you've learned from some of your mentor leaders, what have they been?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go back to one that was from previous. This is Randy Harrington. Randy is the CEO of Extreme Arts and Sciences, a consulting agency. And I remember back in the early 90s, he invited me to join him to do a startup of a training company to train people in basic Windows platform applications. Because, you know, Willow, I don't know that you would remember this, but there was a day when the DOS operating system was king and everybody had to transfer to a Windows graphical user interface. And so the training was rich.
I do remember this because wasn't this in the era of you had to go to a store and rent either a VHS or a beta movie? Wasn't this the same era?
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
I'm on board, Corey.
Oh, fun. Yeah. Way back when, in the early 90s. And anyway, that's neither here nor there, other than we started up this company together. He was the founder, and I was one of the first people he hired to do this. And it was a great experience. And I remember one morning I was just having all of this anxiety and worry about teaching Quattro Pro level 2 for DOS for accountants. And I hadn't used spreadsheets much in my professional life at that point. And I just needed to stay a step ahead of them in terms of the application. And I was freaking out going into this class that I was supposed to teach to all these people that know way more about what they're doing than I do. And my coach, mentor, Randy, sat me down. I just said, I'm so nervous about this. I can't believe I have to do this. And they're going to see me out right away and I'm going to fail. And he just looked at me and sort of calmly laughed a bit, as he usually does. And he said, Corey, all you have to do is get over yourself and get into your people. Because I had grown up with, I had been experiencing all this worry and this anxiety about this situation. And, oh, I am going to not do well in this situation. And he said, get over yourself. So that was one of the greatest lessons that a key mentor coach has taught me. Another is from our mutual friend, Bill Palmer. And this is a very simple one. He's been very helpful and profound in many ways, but it's a very simple one. He said, when you're planning forward, just do back of napkin planning. In other words, he said, if you get too detailed with all your plans and write them all out and this, that, and other strategic thing, he said, you know, you've probably lost the energy. So when we're planning and we're thinking forward, just do it like you're sitting down with someone at lunch, writing on the back of a napkin. Here's my plan. And that has released a lot of those worries about, am I going to get it right? Is this going to be good enough? And other things like that to get to the work of thinking forward, which is pretty awesome.
It's amazing to me how someone can say just a simple statement, and they might not even think it's a big deal what they're saying, but it sticks with you for years and years later, and it informs and shapes your own leadership.
Basic and simple and profound.
And it's the power of having mentors and coaches in our lives.
Yeah. So I got two more for you real quick. You want two more?
Yeah, let's hear them. We're all taking notes here.
From Patty Bergen. Patty Bergen, by the way, is amazing. You've got to meet her. She's the founder and the director of Seattle Coach. She's a master certified coach. She's just incredible. My wife, Adrienne, says, anytime that Patty Bergen's in a room, I just want to be there. So anyway, one of the things that she teaches over and over and over again and demonstrates over and over and over again is that one's presence and energy is always more persuasive than one's words and skills. So you really have to cultivate, we have to cultivate and shape our own presence and fullness of who we are and how we are with other people, even more and greater than cultivating your knowledge and skills. And that's powerful. And then the last, another one, this is a great question. It's from my graduate PhD advisor. His name is Robert Scott. He has now died, and God rest his soul. But he was also a great mentor and coach and encourager of mine. And when I was fretting, I guess you're getting this theme, right? When I'm fretting and anxious, what should I do for my dissertation? And is it going to be the right one? He said, you know, Corey, worry more about making your decision right than making the right decision. And I thought, oh, wow, because there's so much that happens, you know, once God or inspiration leads you to, in a direction or leads you toward a next step. There's so much in making whatever step that is right that comes after you take the first step. So instead of fretting about, you know, what is the right decision, make a decision and then work to make it right. And I think God is like that too. He improvises with how God leads us and works it through along the way to be the greatest improviser. Anyway, that was a long-winded answer, but these were just some things that bubbled to mind.
No, I love it. Thank you for passing on some of the wisdom that you've received from your coaches on to us. I mean, you're a coach to pastors and a leader of leaders. What do you see as some of the top things that trip up a leader from pursuing their goals?
Well, I guess the first thing is something like what I described a moment ago, which is not setting them clearly enough, or not being courageous enough to go after the big thing that is in someone's heart and just settling for where they are. So one of them, I think, is just not dreaming and not listening to, you know, God's planting of these dreams and hopes in people's lives to be courageous enough to say, that is something that I and we should pursue. So that's one, is not being willing to listen to those nudges. The second, I think, would be not knowing enough to share this with others and ask them to partner with you and join with you in accountability to pursue these things. Because I do think sometimes people are a little shy about accountability, and, you know, think of it as, you know, something that might be negative or pejorative, when all it really means is to take an account of. If you have received this dream, this hope, this nudge of where you would like to go, or where your congregation or your ministry or your organization would like to go, and you have it enough to share it with others, you should also build into it the capacity to invite others to help hold you and that ministry accountable for pursuing those dreams and taking the actions and building in the behaviors that can help do it. And then I think the third thing is really looking at what are the behaviors that are going to need to shift in order for those hopes and dreams to come about. And then being willing to do the sometimes significant work of habit shifting in order to allow new behaviors to enter one's life or an organization's life to pursue those goals. So first is, you know, not being open and public enough with your nudges and audacity. Second is often not being willing to invite the kind of accountability that helps you pursue those. And then third is not recognizing that in order to pursue those, ideation isn't enough. You've got to behave into them, and being willing to make the changes that help that behavior get shaped.
You mentioned the phrase habit shifting. Talk to us a little bit more about that. I mean, we have so many women around here who have big dreams for their lives and really want to lean into those. And you also mentioned settling. And I think a lot of times we as women feel like we have to settle and we stop dreaming and stop leaning in. And the idea of habit shifting, tell us about that.
Well, I'll just give you a simple example. This is from my own life and experience recently. You know, during this COVID-19 pandemic, I started to experience a lot of anxiety, and I started to not be sleeping well. And that started to feed on itself. So, you know, you get a little worried and anxious, and then you don't sleep well. Well, that then feeds the worry and anxiety, and then you don't sleep well. And then that it just creates this difficult cycle. So one of the habits I had to shift was my bedtime routine, you know, when you're going to bed. And there were several people along the way that helped me, you know, help me develop this. So I've shifted that pretty significantly. And now, even on my most worried and anxious days, this set of habits that I use to settle my soul and spirit and body in order to enter sleep and get the renewal from that is absolutely essential. But I tell you what, at first, it didn't feel very good to shift those habits. It felt like I was doing things that were onerous. But now I can't, it's almost like I look forward to going to sleep. So the habit shifting moves from, you know, former habits to new habits. And along the way, even though it's difficult, along the way, your mind, the plasticity of our mind and our neural pathways shifts so that then the new habit becomes something that is self-perpetuating rather than the old habit. And it's self-perpetuating because, in fact, sometimes it becomes enjoyable. So that's pretty key. But I also think that so much of the big hopes that we have for our lives and big dreams that we have for our lives get made possible because of micro behavior and micro habit shifts.
That's what's so fascinating, is that the idea of, that you're talking about habit shifting, sometimes it's the simplest things. I mean, we just, as Collide put out an anxiety guide, it's like a 50-page anxiety guide that we collected.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's awesome. And we collected.
If y'all haven't gotten one, go get one.
Yeah. Side plug. But we collected 5 mental health therapists, like professional mental health therapists, all their advice around anxiety. And so much of it is so simple. And one of the things in there, it's what made me think of this, is there's a sleep hygiene list, but moving and shifting things in small ways seems to have a huge effect on the trajectory of our lives for the long haul.
Yeah. Huge impact. Amen. Well said.
You spend a lot of time helping people discern their calling, specifically in ministry. But we have people listening who, you know, they're trying to discern their calling. You know, maybe they're a stay-at-home mom and wondering if they should go back to school or shift a career, or, you know, which major should I pick, or should I leave the business world and jump into ministry? All those kinds of questions. What are some of the ways that you can see a calling confirmed in someone's life?
So your listeners are probably familiar with a Presbyterian pastor. His name was Frederick Buechner, or they may not be familiar. But anyway, he was a remarkable writing pastor. His name is Frederick Buechner. And he once wrote a book that calling is where the world's great need meets your great joy. So, and then I would even add, in some cases, especially when I work with ministries or organizations, I also often add, you know, your calling is where the world's great need meets your great joy, and it generates resources for you. if you can picture circles, you know, of one circle is what the world around you needs. And that world can be really small sometimes. It can be your neighbors. It can be the people on your block, or it could be your whole community, or it could be broader than that. So, you know, people can define what they're thinking about when they say the world, but what the world great needs meets what you have learned you love to do and engage in and feeds you. And then that third circle is, does it help generate resources that you need? Sometimes that might be financial resources. Sometimes it might be idea resources. Sometimes it might be spiritual resources. Sometimes it might be people resources. So, So anyway, finding that intersection of those three circles is kind of what we often talk about when we think of vocation. And it changes. It changes throughout a person's life. I don't subscribe necessarily to the notion of this is my one thing. Because I think God's call to all of us and the way God shapes us might have chapters in the overall book, and people will shift and sometimes really frequently throughout their lives how that calling gets manifest or gets shows up in the world. And it's in those moments of shifting. You know, like you mentioned, there's so many people who have been mothers or fathers and been primary caretaker for their kids. And then they did something professionally or otherwise, or in volunteer capacity before that. And then maybe they took some time to really be a mom or a dad. And then they want to move back into that in another phase of life toward another chapter. Or like many people do, they have either been in ministry or been in some other form of vocation. Maybe they've been teaching, maybe they've been doing some kind of service work, or whatever it happens to be. And then they start to realize, well, you know, maybe this, they certainly realize and listen, maybe this manifestation of my calling is starting to, I don't want to say wear out, but it's starting to come to a completion point, and I need to find another way to serve. So that happens all the time in life. We have waves, ebbs and flows of that. And one of the things that I think trips people up in terms of listening for their calling is that they think they need to figure it out in their head and heart. If you think you need to figure it out in your head and heart, often that can keep people stuck forever. I think it's really important to listen to the thoughts that you have and the analysis that you have and where your heart seems to be leading you. But I think it's equally or even more important to, frankly, put your shoes on the walkway and go try stuff. The work of doing experiments and the play of doing experiments, of putting yourself into different situations or trying a skill on, or going to interview a person and ask them, what is your role like? And could I shadow you for a day? Of, you know, taking the next volunteer role that you think might be interesting because it might allow you to try on and exercise some new muscles, attempting a new craft or art because it's going to use a different part of your brain and your heart than you usually do if you're, you know, analyzing all day. One of the things that people can often do with a coach or with a friend is to say, would you help me to think about and then design experiments that I could do to see if this thing I'm thinking about, or if this uneasiness that is sitting with me that feels like I need to move somewhere else, could you help me think about something I could do or try that might just test this out a little bit? And so designing those types of experiments together is part of what we can do in community, and part of what a coach and or a really good friend can do with you in order to just give you a chance to try stuff on.
I love the challenge of, just trying stuff on, being willing to do experiments. I mean, that's how Collide came to be, right? It's just a willingness to step in and say, what could God do? Instead of, oh no, that's not for me, or I can't do this, or I should do this, or this is what my parents expected me to do. Be willing to lean into experiments and see what God does in you and through you. That can create beautiful things in your life and truly challenge your character and grow you in so many ways. So I love that. Corey, so often people are yearning to tap into this sense of what am I made to do, or figure out their calling. And you just got done kind of inviting us to give ourselves permission to lean into different seasons of our lives, and that our calling might change over time. But sometimes you'll see someone who thinks their calling is something, and it certainly is apparent that it's not. I mean, for years I was in college ministry, and I would see these kids who always thought they wanted to be a teacher, and they declared, you know, a teaching major and went through the entire school to be a teacher. And then they become a student teacher and they're crying and coming to me because they realize they hate being around kids. I guess my question to you is, what are some warning signs that a person may be trying too hard to fit, you know, kind of a square peg in a round hole? Meaning, what are some things one might see if they're trying to force a calling that is not a good fit?
Good question, Willow. I think one, there's a psychological concept called Johari's window. Does this concept make sense to you? Does that sound familiar to you, Willow? Okay, so it's a great one. It's really useful. If you picture a square, and that square has a vertical line through the middle and a horizontal line through the middle, and you've got four squares in the one square. So this psychologist, Johari, basically said, there are things that we know about ourselves and others can know and see about ourselves. And that is in the upper left-hand quadrant of those four windows. So that we are aware of and others are aware of in us. There's another window that we are aware of, but others don't see. And a third window is that others are aware of, but we don't see. And then a fourth window, which is neither us or others can see what it is about us. But it's there and it's waiting for discovery by someone. So the reason why I'm saying that is because, or sharing that is because, you know, in your question, there is so much, there's such an important role for good friendships, for good colleagueships, for trustworthy coaching and spiritual direction and professional relationships, because oftentimes we will have a drive towards something, or we have a desire towards something, and others, if you're in trustworthy friendships, relationships, and colleagueships, you can trust those people to say, yeah, I see that drive in you, but I don't see the fruit of it, or I don't see that it's working well for you. So there are things that others can see that we can't see as well. So I think one of the early signs is to listen for those around you to identify, you know, both the affirmations and the disaffirmations about what you're up to. So listening close to really good friends, I think, is a really important step. And secondly, I think listening to your own emotional life and listening to your own energy life. Like, is what you're doing creating and reciprocating energy for you? And if it is, it's probably a place of fruitfulness. And if it's not, you ought to start looking twice as an early warning sign to say, maybe this isn't something that I should keep doing. Because most often in those circumstances, that's when a person ends up feeling stuck, burned out, or they get to a place where there's no other thing to do other than just quit and fall and drop out. So I think both listening to your own energy and enthalpy is a physics term for an energy system, listening to your own energy and listening to really trusted, close colleagues and friends, the people who you know will both love you and tell you the truth. I would say those two things are really important early warning signs.
That's so good. You're so inspiring people to get coaches and mentors and people in their life to walk alongside them in this conversation. I love that. So many people that we work with at Collide have big dreams and they want to live out their calling, but there are often hindrances and these things holding them back. What's your best advice for people who they're holding themselves back from their own dreams?
So this is going to sound simple. This is going to sound silly. But become part of Collide and get a coach or a counselor. And it's not, I'm serious. It's not silly. Or a spiritual director, because these are the people that are going to help you uncover and unbury those senses that you just aren't worthy or can't do it or don't feel like you're good enough, or just don't want to listen to your dreams enough to take a step with them. And I just think that is so, again, being in community is really essential and important. And it doesn't need to cost a lot to do this. If you want to get coaching or spiritual direction, it doesn't need to cost a lot. You could do this with a few friends and just invite them to listen to your life with you. And then say, whenever you hear me shrinking back from what I'm being called to do, whenever you hear me saying, oh, but it couldn't be me, I'm giving you my permission on the upfront to call me out on it. Let's make a nonverbal cue of some sort that says, okay, you're dissing yourself again. What have you, but I think building that those types of friendships that you proactively invite people to be a source of inspiration and accountability for you to take steps to pursue your goals and dreams, I just don't think there's any other good thing. Because if someone just sits and listens to their own thoughts about themselves, that'll just create a self-perpetuating cycle. It will create rumination more than it will create action. It'll create self-defeat rather than self-promotion. And I think when people start to take steps, they will learn through what they encounter whether they should keep walking that direction or go somewhere else. So anyway, I just can't stress enough the building community, friendships, support relationships to help people believe in themselves and to take steps to test it out and make adjustments all along the way until the new thing comes to fruition.
You know, you're talking about the importance of community. I want to shift a little bit and move from talking to you about sort of coaching people to discern their calling and lean into what they're made to do, and talk a little bit about church. And you coach pastors and leaders of church. And I have a few questions I want to ask you about that. One is, how often do you come across people who've been wounded by the church?
Frequently. I think most people who have been involved in church for a long period of time have been wounded by it in some way. I guess I would just say it's frequent. It's well more than half the time. And my wife often says it's a good thing there's a Holy Spirit, because if there wasn't, I can't imagine the church would still be around. Because when you look back at the way a church has been and has been known for throughout history, there is amazing life, hope, well-being, contribution to better society, social justice, becoming a better community and better individuals, and serving the world selflessly. There's a remarkable piece, and there is as much yuck. And I would like to think that, you know, after 2,000 years of the Jesus way church, and long before then, you know, Judeo forms of church that still continue now as well, and all forms of church. But, you know, organized religion can so often get focused so much on itself and preserving itself, and preserving what it thinks to be right and true, that that instinct and that force harms people, and it is painful and awful. And I've seen it up close. I was asked once, you know, how can you keep serving the church when the church has often been so painful to people? And my response has been, so far, has been, you know, the church has gotten it wrong a lot. Also gotten it right a lot. And I also think it's a place that is commissioned and charged with living the life of recognizing when it has done wrong, seeking to make amends and to apologize and to correct its ways, and hopefully moving toward reconciliation and redemption, and hope, and through forgiveness. And I think following Jesus makes this possible. And in the church, living that gospel of, you know, making promises, breaking promises, being broken, seeking forgiveness, living out redemption, and doing that in interpersonal lives that are informed by this gospel, I think the church has probably the highest potential of any organization to live that well when it is authentic to who its Lord has called it to be.
You know, I know that you hear about the pain. I know that you're aware of the wounds that the church has caused, is causing. And I know that, you know, I am too. I mean, I feel like I work with so many people who are barely hanging on to Jesus by a thread and have given up church, and yet they can't shake Jesus. And yet the church and all its wounds are really caused by wounded people. That's where, I mean, the concept we talk a lot about around here is wounded collision. And we're just colliding with wounded people, and they're hurting us, and we're, you know, blaming the capital C church. But there's still something about you, Corey, that won't let go of the church. And you do a lot of work encouraging and cheerleading. You've done it for me with Collide, but coming alongside and redreaming what the church can look like. And I just wonder, you know, before we come to a close, what are some moves of God that you're seeing that are giving you hope for the future of the church?
The first one is ministries like Collide. And we have several in this area of Washington State, many of whom you're aware of. And we call in our little corner of the world, when we see God doing a new thing through someone that that has all the marks of church, but is in a totally different form and manifests in a different way, we call them new expressions of church. And that's one of the most heartening things that I have experienced, because when people think of church, they think of a particular congregation and some particular people and a place in which they meet, whether it's a building or a facility of some sort. But these new expressions of church are taking different shapes and forms, and it's not that usual form. And they're also finding ways to address particular need, a one-stop spiritual shop. They're becoming much more specific and focused, like Collide is. And they're taking different forms of organization, forms of movement. And they're reaching beyond just those who like a particular expression of preaching or a particular expression of music or a particular expression of liturgy. But they're doing it following the call of God and the call of Jesus. And so finding places where people like you and others are just beginning that dream and just beginning to try to test and learn their way into it is the most enjoyable part of being in ministry for me. And we see it happening all over, and that gives me a great deal of hope. I anticipate that in the coming years, what people think of when they think of church is going to be rebranded, renowned, re-understood in a different way. I think the current sense of what church is will continue and will persist, but there's going to be such a much broader mixed economy or multiple expressions of how Christ's church manifests itself, that it's going to be unlike what we've seen in the past. And I think the COVID-19 pandemic, I think this, the racial injustice that we are experiencing and starting to see more frequently, because of new media and other things like that. I think this, these forces and others that are that the church is responding to right now is going to help accelerate that multiplicity of expression. It's going to help accelerate the mixed economy of forms of church and help accelerate the change in our expectations of what that can be. Now, on the other side of that, humans are still going to be humans, and we have to find ways to live together, to make mistakes together, to hurt each other, to forgive one another, and to try again. And that is so central to what Jesus has kept telling us to do in every time and place. Make promises to each other, to care for one another and love one another. We screw up and we don't fulfill those promises. And in fact, we harm people. And if we can find our way in time and in love to forgiveness and redemption, that's the Jesus way. But the way it manifests, in what form, how, and with whom, that can always shift. And I think it's going to shift a lot in the coming years. And I'm kind of excited about seeing what kind of shape that takes.
It's interesting that you invite us into the spiritual act of to try again.
Always. Yeah.
But it's beautiful. I mean, I know, sacrifice and pour out and give and lean into investing in leaders who are investing in the church. And I know that your heart is that people who have been wounded would try again and be blessed and be loved and know that God is good and he's graceful and he's kind and he has beautiful things in store for their lives. And to try again is that's a brave thing to do.
It's one of the most courageous things anybody could do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I realize I work with the church. And I'll be the first to tell you and your listeners that sometimes leaving church is the most spiritually mature, healthiest thing a person can do, and may just be the thing that Jesus wants you to do. And I think that's really important for people to hear and to know, even from someone who works with the church. Because yes, the church has hurt people remarkably over the years. And And in many cases, if you want to try again with church, the church that you're trying again with needs to deserve it, needs to prove itself that it is worthy of your energy, your spirit, yourself. So take that seriously. And there are a couple of really great books that are worth exploring about leaving church. One is called by Rachel Held Evans. It's a book called Searching for Sunday. And she comes from a more conservative background in church, and she had to leave for her own health and well-being. And she found her way back. And it's a great story about all of that. Another one is by an Episcopal priest who's an amazing writer. Her name is Barbara Brown Taylor. It's called Leaving Church. And it is also another wonderful testament to leaving being a healthy thing. And I think this is actually one of the ways in which God reforms and transforms both church and other ways of being and following Jesus that are not just through the church. And so I'm just really grateful for all of the ways in which new expressions are coming about. And but I think that might be something you want to get to later. I just wanted to bless those listeners who have chosen to leave for their own health and well-being, and say, if you're going to try again, the other party needs to step up to the plate and deserve your trying again.
Mm-hmm. Corey, I have to ask you, because I can sense, you know, some people's hair might be standing up, you know, on their head, like, what? This guy who works for the church is suggesting that the most spiritual thing might be to leave the church. Which you don't usually hear from people who work for the church. Would you also say that sometimes there's some deeply spiritual lessons for us in staying in the church? Like, I understand if it's almost like a toxic relationship that we're having with a toxic church, but also it's pretty impossible to find the perfect church. And so how have you seen, you know, character and beauty and reconciliation come out of trying again and having to work it out and enter into the brokenness that is humanity that makes up the church? And good things can come from that. Spiritual things can come from that too. How have you seen, you know, that happen?
Yeah. Amen. That happens a lot, and it's wonderful. Yeah. So over and over, I think what happens in those circumstances is in some cases, an individual who had an idea of what church should be starts to realize that it is bigger than their idea and it is broader than their idea. And they start to get more of a God's eye view of what's going on through church, because, you know, church has always been, frankly, a bunch of humans, a bunch of sinners who have found a way to live life following their Lord that allows them to grow and sanctify and to build their own spirits into something that looks and feels more like what God wants. And the church is absolutely a place for that to happen. Staying in many cases means being willing to lie your idea of what church should be at God's feet and see how God wants to reform that for your well-being. And that's pretty powerful too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have seen, even in myself, times where I felt dismayed or frustrated or mad or like my values don't align in all ways, which is hard to make happen. But where I've gone through seasons of time being critical of the church, deconstructing church, and then finding
thanks be to God.
But then finding that there's beauty that comes from learning patience, learning we're all in process, learning we're all broken and hurting, learning we're all a little misguided, and walking alongside people in church who might be different than me, who might believe slightly different than me, who might want different things in worship than me. So I see the beauty in both, recognizing if you're in a toxic church situation and it's not inviting you and drawing you to be closer to Jesus. But at the same time, I can see where you and I are not going to find the perfect church, because it is run by people like you and I. And
that's right.
Boy, are we often just afraid sometimes, you know? Yeah. So, I love the invitation that you lay out, that it's sometimes the best thing you can do is to leave and go to a church where you will thrive and you will fall more in love with Jesus than you have ever have. And yet there's also a time where, you know, this is the time to stick it out, to try again, to see how your character can be changed. Corey, thank you so much for hanging out with us for an hour. And if anything, my greatest encouragement to those listening is look what can happen when you spend 45 minutes with someone and learn from them. There's so many nuggets of wisdom. And Corey, once again, I spent, you know, less than an hour with you and I've taken a jillion notes. I so appreciate who you are and what you do in this world. Thank you for hanging out with us.
Thanks for the opportunity, Willow. Let's do it again.
Sounds good. We will.
Thank you. Thank you for what you and Collide are gifting to amazing women and people around the world. God bless you. May you have the courage and peace of Christ in the middle of all this crazy.
Thank you, Corey. And for those of you listening, keep colliding and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks for tuning in. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at we.collide, on Facebook as at We Collide Women, and you can also visit our website at wecollide.net to find our blog, resources, event information, and more. One last thing. If you enjoyed this episode, would you take a few seconds and leave us a review? It seems like such a small act, but reviews help us to keep producing this content and help other women find it too. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode and letting us walk with you as you seek and collide with Jesus.